Tonight it is my pleasure for the first time to welcome to Many Rivers Books and Tea Russell Dellman, who I've only just gotten to know in the last few months personally, although we have crossed paths, it appears, many times over the years, yes. Since Russell has been living in Sevastopol here for a while, and so have I. But when Stuart and I did a radio interview with him at the end of March, I believe it was, it was a wonderful opening for me. I'm always delighted to see how people create unique syntheses of different forms of spiritual work and make new doors to the real for others through that work. And I immediately recognized that Russell was such a person, and so I'm really happy to welcome him here to Many Rivers. Please join me in welcoming here.
Thank you so much. Well, first, I'm so grateful to be here. Grateful for the invitation, and especially grateful that you showed up, because if you weren't here, I wouldn't be talking, and I wouldn't be hearing what he has to say, because I always learn something new, because you will invite something new, which is actually pretty incredible, that the interaction between us, whether we're speaking or just being together in the room, will invite something new. I mean, I know some of what I want to say. I've got ideas and a kind of hope that I can communicate something about a really fairly radically different way of thinking of this word embodiment, or what it means to be alive in an embodied way. What that has to do with what is traditionally called meditation, and what all that has to do with things that happen in Boston, in Afghanistan, in Rwanda, things that are happening right now while we're sitting here. Could there be some relationship between our embodiment, our meditation, and some kind of influence on the world around us? So those are big subjects and things that I'm really, my life is based around, I would say. So I'm interested in looking freshly, hopefully have some time for interacting, questions, comments. But I kind of want to offer a picture. And, I like to pause and wait for what wants to come next. So this term embodiment, let me start by kind of maybe unpacking that a little bit. What I am meaning when I use that term is what it means to be whole. Would be another term for embodiment, a sense of wholeness, what one of my teachers, Moshe Feldenkrais, liked to call integration, where there's a sense of the whole human being functioning together. There's a quality of presence, we could call it a presence in one's wholeness, that is all included in this word that I'm using, embodiment. So one thing that it's not is about the body in the traditional sense, as the body as a physical object, as most of us were raised to think of it. So it implies much more than that. But even like right now, how this one is speaking and how the listening is occurring, we want to wonder, am I listening in an embodied way? Am I speaking in an embodied way? Because most of us have been taught, and even those of us who've been on the path for a long time can very easily fall into living in parts of ourselves. So what would an example of living in a part? Well, one could be listening almost exclusively with their thinking process right now, right? With their left hemisphere very activated and kind of comparing what he's saying to other things and kind of trying to work with it like that, which is very helpful as a part of ourselves when that part is connected to the whole of ourselves, yeah? But when our thinking is separated out, as certainly I was taught to do, and most of us are taught to do, to kind of think of things as if we can imagine it from up here, and the world is happening out there and down there, right? Isn't that an interesting picture? As if I can somehow have a valid image of reality by being in this part of oneself. Similarly, some people are living mostly in their feeling, in their emotions / feeling, and that becomes, we could say, separated from the totality, from the thinking qualities, the symbolic qualities, from the sensory input from the body. Yeah. So the first thing I'm hoping for in our being together is that we can invite our totality here. So you've been traveling to get here. Maybe we can take a few moments. I invite you to close your eyes for a moment. And yeah, if that's comfortable, maybe just take a moment and feel that the chair is here and your bottom is here. And maybe you can sense your feet on the floor. And really just the basic reality of that. Your feet are here. Your right hand is touching something. And I wonder if one could just give a few moments to the living quality of the right hand. And the living quality of the left hand. How amazing it is we can feel ourselves right here. And the breath comes and can be welcomed. This particular breath, we don't breathe in general. It's this breath. And as you're opening to, I'm here, on this spot, there's always some qualities of how you feel. Because first there's I am here, and then there's, how am I here? So first, you're here on this spot. There are sounds also. That's part of the reality of this spot. And this spot includes the totality of this moment. You're sitting on this chair. The sounds come and go. And from that, I am here, we can enter that next level of intimacy with the moment, which is, how am I right now? And there's always a variety of hows, how I am. It might be a classical emotion, like I'm happy, sad, angry. It might be something more like an energetic, like I'm a little tired, excited. Sometimes it's opposites at the same time. Our body is so capable of having all these things. So, but I wonder, can we inquire into how I am and still be having the chair somehow there? In other words, can we be really sitting as a whole human being? And these words are being processed. So thoughts come, oh, do I like this? Do I agree with this? What's he talking about? What's this got to do with? And all that can be going on while you're sitting in a chair, hearing the sounds, noticing the, to say, feeling responses, the felt senses that go on. And there's maybe another few moments of allowing that kind of totality, where we could say a totality would include at least a body sense, a feeling sense. Some kind of images or thoughts, symbols, and some kind of connection to the world around you. That's a critical piece, that we can't be integrated in ourselves. We can't be whole in ourselves. We can only be whole in a moment. And that moment is always in a space. So, just let all that be there. It might inspire some thought, some feeling, some sensation. Is that true? We can only be whole in connection to a particular space. I'm proposing, as you sense into what I'm saying, not looking for agreement or disagreement, that you can't be whole outside of your environment, that you are already linked, a part of, an emanation from, a collective with the space around us. And just another few moments of letting all that, and I'm going to also add some sound. Totality, how the sounds are working in your body right now. It's a different space. You're still sitting here, feelings are shifting, images come and go. As we connect also to the visual world, it's an invitation I offer to also sense that without any effort, with simply an opening of attention, you can be listening actually from your bottom and from your feet and from your hands, that you can be listening. It's really not just our heads. Our heads are also welcome participants in our listening. It offers a certain aspect of experience. But what's it like when we have our whole body, our chest, our belly, our bottoms, interested in interacting with what's coming? So embodiment for me has those qualities, that sense of wholeness. One of my important teachers, I'm going to talk for a little while and then we'll interact a little bit, but I kind of want to paint a picture a little bit. So one of my most important teachers, Moshe Feldenkrais, worked a lot through movement, a lot through awareness of the body. What he was really interested in was the awakening of the potential for freedom in a human being. And he saw cultivating awareness as a path of freedom. And that awareness of the body, he said, well, it's not for the body. It's that this is a very tangible way of cultivating our, we could say, our presence, our awareness, our capacity for here-ness. And then this picture of integration actually brought one of his books, Awareness Through Movement. This is a quote, probably my favorite Feldenkrais quote, and I wanted to give it to you. Because it helps, in his words, to give this quality that I'm thinking of. He goes, "In those moments when awareness succeeds in being at one with our feelings, our sensations, movement, and thought, the carriage, meaning the carrying of the human being, will speed along on the right road. The man, we say the woman, the person, can make discoveries, invent, create, innovate, and know. When all that is together, when that thinking, feeling, sensing, moving in a space, when all that's functioning together, this capacity for knowing occurs. And he grasps that his world, or she grasps that her world, and the great world around are one world. And in this unity is no longer ever alone." And that picture of the wholeness of us when we are experiencing this quality of embodiment, this quality of all, could say, permeable to the world around us and present in one's, on one's spot, in one's moment, offers this surprise. For me it was a surprise that this human being is actually unknowable outside of this connecting to this larger world. And in that moment, the sense of that devastating sense that so many of us, particularly in our current world, are living in, that sense of isolation, separation, the unintended consequences of narcissism that shows up not only in society at large, but in a lot of spiritual communities, of people getting lost in what they think of as a self that has somehow gotten disconnected. It's trying to find itself by itself, through itself, and if it wasn't so tragic, it would be really funny. If it wasn't so painful. So there's something about this interconnectivity that is implicit in embodiment, the way I'm using it. So let that land a little bit, see where that lives. Again, I'm not looking for agreement, more you're listening to the inner place that resonates with some of what's being said and maybe goes, no, that doesn't feel right to other things. And, I trust that listening. I trust that inner teacher, that inner place that recognizes something that goes, yes, that there's something in that that's important. That part I'm not sure about. You know, that's what we want to listen for. That, for me, is what can move us into more than just kind of talking about some words. I got to be in Hawaii at the beginning of last month. And that was a blessing. My wife and I hadn't had that kind of vacation in a while. And you know what can happen to your body in the tropics. Those of us who love the tropics, anyway. But you know, you go to Thailand, right? There's a certain, you know, the smells and the. So we decided we really wanted this kind of just at a beach. We're in a hotel. It wasn't doing a great adventure. It was just staying at a hotel on a beach and having that kind of 9 days or something. And so there's a lanai outside, And the ocean is very regularly, 24/7, coming. And I'm up early, and so I'm on the lanai meditating, and it's just one of those mornings. Just one of those mornings that I've experienced before, never quite in the same way. It's always unique, where the sound and this incredible combination of birds in these palm trees, you know, so they're all singing, and so the vibration gets pretty strong with the and all these different sounds, and the morning light is coming, and the style of sitting that I do is an eyes open sitting, and so all this is happening, and the end of the sentence, I'm just sitting there and I'm feeling this kind of vibration, not kind of, this vibration through my body that is mirroring the vibrations around me, and it's this wonderful experience. And I have this moment where the words come, I've never left my mother. So what does that mean? And then it was, I've never left the mother. And then I realize I'm sitting here and she's breathing me and she's holding me up. I couldn't be sitting here if she wasn't holding me up, and she's breathing me and she's singing to me, and it was like this feeling like the whole world was an umbilical cord, and I was, you know, so this kind of carried through it actually enters a very interesting experience of swimming with some whales, but that's a whole other story that would take too long to tell. But, you know, eating a mango and feeling like she's feeding me, not as a thought, not as also a picture, because you need words, and words are thoughts, but this feeling of this interconnectivity that is implicit in what I'm describing as embodiment, and in the process of what I call meditation, or just learning to sit with reality as it is, a friendliness towards what comes, a permeability toward what comes, that in that interacting and giving and receiving of breath, how remarkable it is that we sit here breathing, and just by exhaling we feed the trees, and by inhaling we receive the gift from them. I mean, I think we would be awed and struck silent if we could actually get the nature of this breath that we are taking, and the gift that we are giving and receiving simultaneously. So when our embodiment enters meditation in that way, where we're not, where we're recognizing this continuity with this fluidity, this capacity for noticing and yet not withdrawing from. I sometimes have a problem with how popular mindfulness is, because some people, this isn't true, this is not a criticism of mindfulness, but there are, there is a temptation of a lot of people to get mindful up here of all that's happening down there. And, oh, that's a tragic error. We want the being with, but we don't want to lose that intimacy. You know, we've been rejecting life long enough. And another way of rejecting it is to come up here and notice it down there or out there. It's a trap we want to be aware of. It's not getting a lot of press, but that is a trap that those of us on the path want to be aware of. You know, it's so easy to reject life and so challenging to really be intimate, really to welcome. You know the poet David White, he does that really nicely. He's got a poem called Enough. So he goes, enough. These few words are enough. And if not these words, this breath. And if not this breath, this sitting here, returning to the life I have rejected again and again until now. Until now. I want to give that to you one more time. It's poems you have to hear twice to let them in, really. Enough. If you get this like all the way in there, if it wants to go there. Enough. These few words are enough. And if not these words, this breath. And if not this breath, this sitting here, returning to the life I have rejected again and again and again and again and again and again. Until now. Until right now. So this intimacy, this embodiment toward this picture of meditation that has this intimacy built into it. I just want to talk a little bit about that connection to my picture of world peace and how that fits together. So, there are different levels, I think. So for me, this quality of friendliness with what arises, friendliness with what comes, that is practiced in this kind of meditation and this attitude of embodiment, is a ground state for, we could say, personal peace, for oneself finding that they're not fighting their old thoughts. They're not fighting their feeling states. They're not fighting, or at least they're noticing when they're fighting with what our partners are bringing us, what the traffic is bringing us, what life is bringing us. There's an interest in noticing that. And that, we can't underestimate how powerful that is. The capacity for noticing what's coming, for welcoming it, or noticing that we're not. And to be able to actually be a warm-hearted presence for the one who can't stand it, the one who's rejecting life again. There has to be room for that. And so it gets so big that whatever comes, the bottom of the bottom, is there's space for you. And if that's here, what begins to happen is our cells begin to feel peaceful. Our cells begin to let down. What they let down from what? What they've been taught to do, which is be on guard. Be on guard in case something dangerous is going to happen. But our cells begin to relax, begin to go, this is a safe place to be. I can be on guard if I need to be, but I don't have to live on guard. And that becomes a bodily state. And that's an amazing, amazing possibility for us awakening human beings. that with the kind of listening that we can learn, actually ourselves can change in some of their programming. So the first thing is this attitude begins to bring about a quality of what we could call presence, a willingness to be present with what's here. And the people that we interact with tend to pick up on that. Right? Because our, you know, those of you who know a little bit of neurology, I'm not going to talk a lot about it tonight, but our brains resonate with each other, our bodies resonate with each other. And if your resonance of peace is strong enough, people who are feeling anxious will get peaceful around you. You will affect them. They will affect you. You will affect them. And we do that with each other all the time. So our personal entry into a deeper presence begins to influence the immediate beings that we interact with. And that's a beautiful gift, that sharing. And of course, it's like dominoes or something. What's the image? I don't know. It goes out further. Those affect those. So this quality of embodied presence or wholeness begins to have an effect whether we want it to or not. But then maybe some of us want it to. And so there's a sense of interacting not only with our presence, but we start feeling this connection to others where spontaneously there's a wanting to help. There's a wanting to be kinder when we're in traffic, because it's not our car against their car. When we have this quality of wholeness or embodiment or presence, there is this sense of we're not separate. And that's remarkable when beings grow that quality, where generosity and kindness are, we don't do it to be good and nice. We do it because it's totally natural expression. You know, so how those of you how you know, I think of my daughter, I have a 24-year-old daughter. It doesn't take a whole lot of effort to be nice to her. You know, or the beings we care about, think of your puppy or think of, you know. We can get upset with them for doing this, but the basic kindness, it's not like I've got to train myself, you know, to get over my basic desire to hurt them. No, it's so natural. Well, when that feeling begins, when that circle of your caring grows out to include the other beings around, it's the most natural thing in the world. It's the most natural thing in the world. And I would suggest that growing out, that movement into larger spheres of our natural kindness wanting to come forward is a great contribution to world peace. We do things on an everyday basis, little things. So there's just the presence. Then there's the kind of little actions. We hold the door for people, or we see they're in a rush and we let them go ahead of us, and where these kind of natural behaviors begin to arise more and more. And then on a larger level, where some of us drawn toward how can I be part of a group of people who are contributing in some more specific ways into the world. So that's kind of, we can see that as an outgrowth of this embodiment, of this wholeness that one would experience that is already interconnected. If one is not separate, that's natural functioning, we could say. Now the last level I want to mention is the one I know least about, and I'm very curious about. Like this Saturday, I'm going to put a pitch out that you come to some of the hours of an all-day meditation that I'm hosting. I have a little retreat center outside Sebastopol, or in Sebastopol on the outskirts on Bloomfield Road, and four times a year I do an all-day sitting where I'm just there, and I'll show you the hours and stuff. I start at 6 in the morning, I go till 5:30 in the afternoon, and people come and go. There's no charge, of course. You just come and go as you like, and you sit. And the picture is sitting for world peace. And how could a group of people sitting in Sebastopol, California, have any kind of influence on what's happening in Nigeria or New York City? Or I don't know. But I'm very curious about that. I have suspicions. And so I know that it's helpful for the one sitting there. I know that it's helpful for those I come in contact with. I know that it grows out into larger ways, because when I have days like that, my sense of interconnection grows and grows. And I'm very interested in this next level of if we sit, and I've got students, quite a few students in Europe who host groups at the same time in Vienna and Munich and Stockholm and Uppsala and in France. And so my embodied life community picks the same day, and we have the feeling of resonating this outward. And I'm very interested in that level of the connection between embodiment, meditation, and world peace also. So I'm going to pause and talking and see what's hitting, what's touching, what's confusing, what's... yeah, please.
As you were talking, I found myself thinking this whole idea of when wanting to be spiritual or meditate or get away from the intensity of so much of the world that many of us are in or trying to get away from, it seems like we so often, and I'll say for myself, I so often can... I finding myself in some moments I'm trying to actually getting away from me, my life, my stuff. I don't want it. The intensity, I want to get away from that. So if I go from that to take some time to meditate, that's all nice, but if I'm not there with me in the reality, the issues, the drama, the whatever, then I'm sort of missing the point of it. And you were talking about looking out there rather than being in here. So that came up, and I work with veterans at Vet Connect in Santa Rosa, and I do some interesting, so I take them sailing and out, and that I get embodied. I don't even think about it. Something electric happens when we're connecting in a dynamic natural environment like that, and I'm sure others here are outdoors people too. But the point, the main thing is about this thing about the tendency in wanting to personal practice, I want going somewhere out from the reality of where we actually are in our day to day, and not connecting with also our people and our world around us. Like, go to Walmart, folks, in Runner Park once in a while. I go down there just to be with what I think I don't want to be around. As an example. Besides the meditation, contemplation, and quiet times in a beautiful setting.
So am I getting it right that the importance of taking this practice out there in the world, interacting, that you're not saying it's not, that it's also not a helpful thing to sit with oneself, but then it's the inter. Yeah, I absolutely agree.
It's necessary. It's essential.
It's essential.
If you don't do that, we're almost kidding ourselves.
Right.
It's like getting an attitude like we're somehow superior than everybody else.
Right.
Who doesn't notice these things.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that feels right to me. You know, to be, what is that? One of the things I want to say is I have great concerns at this moment for how much time many of the people I'm meeting, and it's particularly true with the younger people, but not generally, not only, how much time is spent filling up with electrical information, and how I rely on my emails, and I'm on there a lot, but how seductive the bing, bing, bings are. You know, they're stimulating the pleasure centers in our brain, just like chocolate and sexual images, and ding, oh, it's gonna be. But how the capacity to be alone with oneself is getting lost. So I'm not right now talking about the benefits of social media, et cetera, et cetera. I'm talking about one side, which is how important. So I'm speaking to the other side that I also want out there as we're talking about the importance of the interacting. I also want to speak about for peace of an individual and as a culture, the capacity to be alone in one's thoughts, feelings, and sensations without filling it up with something else is such a key feature. And I am quite concerned because I sometimes work with kids, and I 20 years ago when I would see kids who were 5 to 10 years old, that I could bring out a ball and that would do it. Or I even had a jack in the box, and that could keep them going for a long time. Bing! Hey, how cool, you know. Now I see kids getting bored really quickly. That's scary when I see how just the capacity for being with what less stimulation is living out there. So I really think we are training brains with a certain kind of toxic environment for what they're capable of handling. And I'm worried about that. So this willingness to be bored, willingness not to fill it up, you know. I have the hopeful notion, maybe, or that when we, or I think of my students who take up meditation, some of them, when I get them, and it's a new thing for them, and they're just amazed, as you know, Daniel, just so amazed at the quantity of nam, 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 because they've never sat with themselves before, and they think they're crazy, and how relieving it is for them to hear that other people have nam, 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 nam. You can almost have a competition for who has more nam, nam. And the willingness, the courage it takes to be willing to sit and breathe and orient toward presence. I know we are giving gifts to ourselves, and I hope we are giving gifts to the culture around us, especially as it gets speedier and speedier. But to your point also, there is something about that happening not in a monastery, but happening in people who are interacting at Walmart, and also going home and finding a way to not just feed the beast, so to speak. Yeah, that's where it wanted to come to. Thank you.
Yeah. Either or.
Right. Right. Great.
Red was beautifully simple and eloquent enough.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. Something else.
A word has a body. A word has a presence. The electronic thing is taking over relationship with words very much now. But we inherit much of our own embodiment and our own presence from our relationship with that, with the word that we speak. That we speak. There is a conversation going on between your body and your word as you're speaking it. And so presence and embodiment. Words don't get the attention that they require.
Well, I agree with that, especially when words are kept, or the attempt is to keep the words separate from their, what you're describing, this bodily quality, this feeling quality, the picture that I was bringing at the beginning when I would use the term thinking or symbolizing. I was hoping to include language as essential ingredient of human interacting that is then resonating physically and in our feeling life. And yeah, you have something else you want to say about that? I was looking at your face and it looked like,
well, everything is language. It's everything is talking back to everything else all of the time, and there is a problem with connecting our sense of language, our sense of wordage, with the rest of the natural world. So very often, if language is not connected, if our verbal language is not connected, then it will separate us from the. But sounds live in nature. Meanings live in nature. And otherwise we couldn't speak a word or invent a word. So I think what it is that we hunger for is natural presence, the presence of a tree, the presence of a stone. And when we find that in our language, then we inherit it in our body.
And can you feel that natural presence sitting here? Now?
Well, I noticed a long time ago that when I say something in a group, that I feel more present.
Nice. Oh, good. And good. So it comes. Great. So there's more of that now that you've spoken.
I love when conversation is very active among the people, and it's,
it connects you, and you feel.
Yes.
Yeah, I got you. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you read us the quote from Moshe Feldenkrais, I wondered if he saw anything in the human that was essential to an individual that was independent of the connection to the world around.
Anything in the individual that was essential, that was separate
that would, that anything that has an integrity.
Ah, I think I'm getting it.
An essence of the human.
Yeah, yeah,
that
okay.
is just is, regardless of the context in
okay,
which we
yeah,
find ourselves.
Yeah, so, yeah, so nice, so nice, yeah. So let's sit with that for a minute. So I'm very curious about the ways in which the one here is being birthed by the ones here. In other words, that it's completely accurate for me to say that we are forming each other as we are informing each other. Now, it's also true to say that there's something about the one sitting here that has a very strong relationship to the one who left his wife back at the place over there. There's some continuity of the one who is being born in this moment through our interacting, and I mean that quite literally, and yet is not excluding the sense that there's a that there's a deep and intimate connection between the one here and the one who was in the car. So the first way I want to speak about it is say that there's a paradox that we are born anew, truly, in interaction, and it is interaction that gives birth to us. And simultaneously, there is a continuity of, what do we want to call it? A self? A capacity? We'd say, there are a lot of new cells here that came over the last few hours. So there's literal birth going on here, and he looks a lot more like the guy who was home than you do at my home, and you look like a lot more like the guy who was at your home than I do. So there's something. So I love being in that paradox of being very cautious about what do I want to say is the same as I'm truly bowing to the one who is being born here, is really being born here. So, what would Moshe Feldenkrais say? What was essential that is not dependent upon an environment? The first thing he would say is, "How can you ask such a question?" Then he would calm down. He liked to yell. It was his style. This is a part of the Ukrainian-Israeli tradition, is you don't answer questions calmly. You kind of So that's the first thing he'd do. Right? You wanted to know him, right? So I'm giving you some of his style. And then he'd probably say you didn't know what you were talking about. And then he would get to looking at what did you really mean. And he would say something like, "Don't you realize that you couldn't sit here without this earth? That even thinking of yourself separate from this earth is a ridiculous thought. How did we lose the fact that we are inseparable? That without this air we couldn't have this conversation? That without this, that if there wasn't light we wouldn't have eyes? How can we lose this, the fundamental fact of our interconnectivity? How did we lose that? It's only because we get lost in our thoughts and we believe them."
I would say, with all due respect, that I think you've avoided my question.
I haven't finished yet. I'm just kind of warming up. I love the question. I just want to kind of keep wrestling with it. From
what is this you you're referring to when you're pointing at me? What is this I you're referring to when you point to yourself?
Wait, I need a bell. Wait a second. I can't really respond without something to go. What is that? What is it? What is it? What is it that is... that we are pointing toward? Who is that that we're pointing toward? Now, I will avoid an answer that puts it in a box, because I know that box will be false, and I know it will lead us astray, and I know eventually it will objectify us, and we will then be in these separate worlds. I also know that there is something unique about you that is a gift that only you can bring. And I'm very curious about that. And how to honor your absolute uniqueness without putting you into a box, without convincing you that your name is you. I'm very interested in that. And I'm not avoiding the question. You get it?
Oh, I think Marcia was avoiding the question.
Thank you. Yeah. That's great. I love it.
You know, it's really boils down to is, for me,
yeah,
I'm not so interested in who I am. I'm more interested in what I am.
Uh-huh.
Does that resonate anywhere in you?
I guess where it resonates, what's your name?
Carl.
Carl. Where it resonates for me, Carl, is, yes it does, to answer your question, and where it resonates in me is, what am I now? I don't have a lot of energy at the moment for what am I going to be, or what was I, or even what was I answering this man's question or responding with him, but what am I meeting Carl in this context with the nodding heads and the scratching faces and with all of this living together? That what I'm very interested. And the only way I know it is by being with the one who's interacting and being awake to all that, you know, being curious about that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. It's mysterious. This living is mysterious, don't you think so? Yeah.
The conversation you guys had, I think that I have this exercise that I do, and it's not, I didn't make it up, it's somewhat traditional in the Zen tradition. And the question is, what is it? So, not who.
Yeah.
And also the it. I really appreciate the it.
Yeah.
And because it, the way that I feel it, it's like a little bit of a slap in the face, in the good, just a little shock. You
yeah.
know? I might be very happy walking in the park, and I just say, what is it? And I'm just, you know, startled.
Yeah.
You know,
nice.
Just
yeah.
that. Huh? So I think that somehow it reminded me
yeah,
of that.
That's nice. I like
because
that.
Because I have to at that moment. Well, I don't have to do anything at that moment. But I am faced with what I have in front of
yeah.
me, what's surrounding me.
What is this? Yeah.
Sounds right, right.
Yeah. That's great. I like that. You know that Buddhist conference where the Zen teacher, I think Korean Zen teacher,
yeah.
picks up the orange?
What is it? What is it? What is it? What is it?
And the Tibetan teacher says to the guy next to him, says, they don't have oranges in Korea? Yeah, but that's a great question. What is it? Yes. So, let's take a moment. Maybe close your eyes once again. Let's kind of drop in a little bit. And just settle down in your bottom. Trust your body sitting here. This is your moment. The incredible gift of embodiment. Steiner says the angels envy us. At least some of them do. That there are certain things we can learn in this body we can't learn outside this body. And the first one is locate yourself right here on this spot. This breath. This sitting here. And we let the ruminations about past and future go and really be right here. And sense this doorway to presence, this doorway to this present moment. And then as you drop into your body to feel through to the spaciousness within this physical body, around this physical body, that we don't have to stay only in the tangibility or in the sense of substance, but the substance can be a doorway, and the door is open. Rumi would say, round and open, these two worlds of substance and space. And feel, can you get a sense of letting go of your pictures of your body? Finding your body brings you to presence, but then you can let go into the space around you. There's space within you. And that space is one space. The air around you, the air within you, is one air. Just let the sense of the body which has brought you to presence, you can let that lighten and feel the quality of spaciousness of being right here. Sounds come and go through that space. And one can rest sensing the space that the sounds come and go through. Resting there. The breath comes and goes through. Resting there. Feel this, it's traveling from, we could say, the substance into the space, back to the substance into the space. It's two worlds. I'll give you a Rumi while you're in there. I'll give you a Rumi poem. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are moving across the door sill where the two worlds meet. The door is round and open. Don't go back. Give it to you again. Feel the sense of this movement. You call it conscious, unconscious, form and emptiness, wake and sleep. The whole world invites us to come awake to this. What is it? The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are moving across the door sill where the two worlds meet. The door is round and open. Don't go back. A feeling for that open door. Just feel how that resonates in your body. Just how it, when you're in your chest, in your belly, and you're in there, and you're letting, this door is round and open. Nothing is hidden. It's open. Let that, invite that resonance in your chest, in the space around you and within you. Body is a doorway to the infinite. Another way Rumi put that, resplendent spirit or body made from the ground. Which are you? Resplendent spirit or body made from the ground, which are you? Tell me, I am puzzled. All this light, yet a body. Who is the teacher? Give it to you again. This is not the whole poem, but this is the part that I like. Give it to you once more. Resplendent spirit or body made of the ground, which are you? Tell me, I'm puzzled. So much light, yet a body. Who is the teacher? Does it mean for this spirit to be living through our body? For this body to be none other than spirit? For the spirit to be other than body? What does all that mean? Can we feel something resonate from all that? Great. Anything else like to come? I'm curious. Well, the message I want to leave and then we'll kind of finish up for the night, is the great gift of a practice of I am here, on this spot. And this spot is always a particular place. It's not in your body only. Your body is always in a space. And the spot is always this and this. You only meet life in a moment. And that moment is an environment. And that environment brings you to life in a particular way. And we want all of that. If we don't have all of that, we will feel separate. We will feel isolated. We will feel lonely. We will feel like it's happening all out there and we somehow missed it. And I know people who've been conscientiously on a spiritual path for 30, 40 years, and that sense of separation is there. So I want to argue strongly for I'm here on this spot, and this spot is always in relationship to a larger space. And to let your body have it, this great, serve its great gift of locating you in time and space, not as an end point, but as an entry point. Not as an end point, an entry point. It's not worshiping the body. The body is an entry point. It's a key that opens. Sometimes use the phrase, presence is a doorway to being, and embodiment is the key to this presence. It opens the presence. It opens the door of presence so that we can enter this spaciousness of being. Let's get that again. So there's this doorway of presence that opens into this infinite being. The doorway of presence that opens into this emptiness or infinite. And the key to that doorway is our embodiment. But we don't keep holding on to the key. Once the door is open, you can drop the key. In fact, you don't even have to hold on to the door handle. You open into the space. And you feel that. Can you feel that? Can you feel, let that gesture, let that sense land. And then we are connected to all around and within. Feels like one world. So, I'm here. On this spot opens us into this larger space. This next level of subtlety, how am I, can also be helpful for continuing to that opening into connection to the moment. I'm here and how am I, which leads us to that spaciousness of I am or isness. And then we can feel at home. Great. Thank you very much for your attention. I want to tell you about tell you about a couple of things coming up, then you tell them about some things coming up. For those who are interested, Saturday, the silent celebration of planetary peace, Bloomfield Road. Take one of these if you think that would be interesting to you. And then June 1st, I'm having an all-day workshop in the same location called Inspired Living, Inner Skills for a Creative and Blossoming Life. Those are two events coming up. It's a beautiful sanctuary we've built. Large barn-shaped structure that we've put a lot of care from its foundation on upward. So, right?
It's a great place.
It's a great space. So, So maybe where can I put these?
I can put these.
Yeah, I'll put these up here for those who are interested. And the website is a good place to go if you want to see my writings. And there's all sorts of things on there, and I put out new writings usually once a month or so. And there's some videos on there. And as of today or yesterday? Yesterday. As of yesterday, we were on Facebook. The Embodied Life School made it to Facebook. It's a big decision. It took me a long time. Students have been nagging me for years, and they go, I don't think so. But, hey, whatever they are, we got 150 likes. I don't know what likes are yet, but I know we got 150 of them. So.
Where did you get to tweet them?
It took me long enough. But I'll tell you, it was so sweet. We've gotten so many sweet messages, right? Of people who are saying, thank you. It makes it so easy to share with our friends. So I'm not quite sure how it's going to work yet. My daughter is teaching both of us what it's like. Valerie is my administrator. And I'll stay for a while if you want to know more about any of the offerings I'm doing or anything else. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll just let people know that we have a donation basket, in this case, over on the counter over there. We encourage you to contribute to it, which we share with our speakers and also retain half to maintain this space for future such events. And I encourage you to contribute to that. There's also some more brochures. So there's literature over there. There's literature for Russell's work over here. A few books that Jim put out. It may interest you. And thank you so much for coming out and creating us tonight.
Yeah, and space. Such a great space you've created thank for you. Us. It's a real community gift.
With
really
these people
thank
as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Yeah. Bless us.
All right.